Hi, this is Colin McCallan. Thank you for listening. Please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. Thank you.
Welcome to Is This Legal? Here are your hosts, attorneys Colin McCallan and Russell Hebbets.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome to another episode of Is This Legal? My name's Russell Hebbets. I'm here with my partner, Colin McCallan. Say hi, Colin.
What's up, everybody?
And we're greeting you from sunny Denver, Colorado. Today, we are going to be talking about defamation.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there is a lot to cover on this, and we're going to dive right in. One thing in the news lately has been the Dominion Sidney Powell lawsuit. So for anyone who has been living under a rock for the last few months, there was a lawyer named Sidney Powell. There is a lawyer named Sidney Powell.
She's still with us.
She was for a time working for Donald Trump and his campaign, or not campaign, for Donald Trump. But she was a key figure in the statements that went out after the election talking about voter fraud and election fraud. And she made some pretty outlandish statements about a voting system called Dominion, a voting company. What some of her statements were that she said Dominion was created in Venezuela to rig the election for now deceased Hugo Chavez. She said Dominion bribed Georgia officials for a no-bid contract. She also said Dominion secretly switched votes from Trump to Biden. Now, all of these statements she made are demonstrably false. They're provable that these were false statements. So Dominion, whose business was significantly harmed by these statements because she was everywhere. She was on every cable news network. She filed multiple lawsuits alleging these.
And she's not the only person who Dominion has sued, but we're talking about her for a particular reason today because she filed an answer to these claims in court this week, didn't she, Russ?
That's exactly right. So we finally get to see what her defense is to this defamation lawsuit. Her defense essentially is, even assuming these statements could be proven true or false, no reasonable person would conclude that they were truly statements of fact. She said that they were just statements that were going to be played out in the court of law to determine whether they were true or false.
If I may, another way of putting that is she's saying that there's no way that the statements that I was making to everybody, there's no way a reasonable person could have construed them as being true.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, very interesting.
Yes. Yeah, no one could construe them as fact. Right. And she actually pointed to Dominion's actual lawsuit, which called them wild accusations and outlandish claims. She said, look, even the other side, they're saying they're wild and outlandish. No one would believe this.
I agree.
Right. So we're starting with just that. We're not going to do an assessment. We're not going to do an analysis right now. We're going to go ahead and tell you guys what defamation is, how you prove it, what the standards are, and then come back at the end and do an analysis. So leading to that, Colin, Mr. McCallan, what is defamation?
Well, it just so happens that I brought my law dictionary here because we're going to cover a few terms here.
Thank you, Mr. Black.
Thump. There it is. Here's this tome. Let's talk about a few words. First of all, three words: libel, slander, defamation.
These sound like emotional words.
They all sound kind of similar, right? You've all heard these before. Let's quickly talk about what they are. First of all, defamation is kind of the all-encompassing legal theory that we're talking about here. You know, right? Defamation means any statement. It covers any statement that hurts someone's reputation or their character. And so, now, libel and slander are under the umbrella of defamation. So libel is where the statement is written. Slander is where the statement in question is spoken.
Okay, but they're both defamation.
Exactly. So if a newspaper defames a person, that's going to be liable because it's printed word. If a TV anchorman defames somebody, it's going to be sued under slander.
I feel like slander just feels like rougher. Like it feels more egregious. Right, right. Like slander, I picture.
You change a couple words, you got slaughter. I mean, right. Now we're getting violent.
Well, I mean, well, yeah, let's not go there.
Well, that's where I went.
When I hear slander, I picture like a Southern gentleman with a glove slapping someone. You, sir, have slandered me.
I challenge you to a duel. Right. Because that's exactly how people in the South talk.
That's how Aaron Burr talked.
So, those are just a quick few things. Those are some basic definitions about what we're talking about here. But libel and slander are types of defamation. Now let's talk about the elements of a defamation lawsuit. So if a plaintiff is bringing a defamation lawsuit, this is what they have to establish.
And this is a plaintiff is someone who had their reputation impinged.
Right. They're the victim of the libel or slander. So that victim, that plaintiff, in order to win their lawsuit, and by the way, this is a civil case. We're talking about a civil standard here. This is not a criminal standard. So in the context of a lawsuit, the plaintiff would have to prove that, first of all, someone made a statement. The statement was published. And by the way, published doesn't mean what you think it means. Published can mean a person says something out loud to another person.
Yeah, it was put out there in the public sphere.
It doesn't have to be in a newspaper or an encyclopedia or something. It's just the statement is out there.
I don't know if there's a lot of slander statements in encyclopedias.
You never know. Guys who wrote Britannica, I hear, were pretty loosey-goosey with the facts. I'm just saying. and who was going to contradict them? World Book?
Right.
Before the internet, those guys had free reign to do anything.
And for anyone who's listening who's under probably 30.
Do you know what an encyclopedia is?
An encyclopedia is what the internet used to be.
There are these things that we call books. They have covers on them. Some of them even have dust jackets.
You can turn pages.
What's a page?
What's a dust jacket?
So anyway, we're still covering the elements of defamation. So someone made a statement, number one. That statement was published. Number two, here's a big one. That statement caused you injury.
Yes.
Number four, the statement was false.
Another big one.
And number five, the statement didn't fall into some sort of privileged category. That's kind of a minor thing. But really, those are kind of the things that a plaintiff would have to establish in order to successfully bring a defamation lawsuit against somebody.
So here's how, if Colin sues me for defamation, if I have made some statement that he thinks is defamatory, how do I defend myself? You know, the best defense for that is the truth.
That's right. Let's just say in this hypothetical, if I'm suing Russ for defaming me, let's say, you know, he wrote that I'm a money grabbing shyster or something like that. And I took issue with that. And I sued him for defamation, claiming that that statement is false. Well, Russ's best line of attack is just to prove what everybody else out there knows, that I'm a money grabbing shyster.
Colin is clearly a money grabbing shyster.
If he can prove it, then he wins. Lawsuit There's no goes defamation.
Away. That's not defamation because it's true.
Exactly. All right. So, by the way, defamation also requires that the communication be to like a third party. Okay. So if Russ comes up to me and says, "Hey, Colin, I don't like you. You're a money grabbing shyster." That's what we call an insult.
Right.
That is not, he didn't defame me because he said it to my face. Now it might be a little different if he went to a newspaper and published something about me or published that statement, or maybe was more specific in terms of why I was a money grabbing shyster. You know, if he expounded on that and I could prove that was false, you know, I might have the ability to sue him for
that. Yeah. So in this example, like it's tough to prove or disprove this. So like another defense I would have is that, hey, that wasn't a statement of fact. That was my opinion.
That's right.
I have an opinion that he's a money grabbing shyster, but it's not something that is demonstrably provable
That's
as
right.
true or false.
I mean, really, I think you can pretty much defame anybody you like as long as whatever statement you make is preceded by three simple words. In my opinion.
Exactly.
You know, so those are kind of the backbones of a defamation lawsuit.
But defamation is not equal to all people, is it, Colin?
No. So how about, I think this is a great time to talk some Supreme Court. What do you think?
I love Supreme Court cases. I know our listeners love Supreme Court cases. So here you go, people. We have a case called New York Times versus Sullivan, and Colin's going to break it down for you.
This is the seminal case. It was decided in 1964 that really, created the current framework that we have for defamation lawsuits. And the big thing that that Supreme Court opinion created, it basically created a defamation standard for public figures. Okay. And in that case, they use the term public officials. So basically, in that case, there was a New York Times piece that ran during the civil rights movement with Martin Luther King. And this ad published a lot of statistics from several police departments that turned out to have factually inaccurate information. Well, Sullivan, who at that time was the head of the police agency in question, decided to sue the New York Times, basically saying they just defamed us by providing all of these, this data that's inaccurate. We've been defamed. The case went all the way to the United States Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court created an exception for public figures. It basically said it's not enough if you are a public figure, a public official, and you are claiming that you have been defamed. You still have to prove all of those elements of a defamation case. You have to prove that a false statement was published, that it caused injury. You have to demonstrate all those things, but you also have to demonstrate actual malice on the part of the defamer.
So it's not enough that it was just false. It's not enough in this case that the statistics they used were incorrect, right, which they admitted to.
Yeah. What the Supreme Court of the United States said, in order to successfully sue for defamation, you have to prove that the New York Times knew wholly that what they were publishing was wrong, was false. So this, as you can imagine, was a huge win for the media, for newspapers, for TV stations, because essentially, if they put something out there that is wrong about a public official, as long as they come back and say, oh, you know what, we relied on inaccurate data, we apologize, if they run a retraction, they can basically save themselves from a defamation lawsuit as long as the plaintiff can't prove that they knew it was false and they ran it anyway.
Because if it's a
that's what that actual malice standard means. That's the I'm using air quotes. That's what the legal term is that we're talking about that's required for a public figure case.
Because if it's a private person, you just have to show negligence.
That's right.
You have to show that the person should have known it was false.
Right.
So you have to show it was false and they should have known.
Right.
But this New York Times versus Sullivan creates a higher standard where it has to be they knew it was false or they recklessly disregarded the truth or falseness of it.
Exactly.
Okay.
But this has been, this is a case that is cited by the media anytime they are sued by anybody for defamation. They rely on this case. Now, the authority of the case, remember this case, New York Times v. Sullivan, only dealt with public officials. The definition was basically expanded to anybody famous, a public figure, in the case of Hustler Magazine versus Falwell. That was also a United States Supreme Court case that was decided in 1988. If you've ever seen the movie The People versus Larry Flint, have you ever seen it?
Never saw it.
It's a great movie. And that case is heavily featured, including the oral arguments to the Supreme Court. It's worth a watch. But Hustler won that case, by the way. And that standard, that actual malice standard, was extended to public figures. So if you're a famous person.
So there it is.
You know,
if you're a famous person, there's a higher standard. It is tough to defame a famous person.
It really is.
And there's some rationale for that. And the rationale for that is, first, like for the public official, you want the government to have eyes on them.
Right.
You want journalists to act as a watchdog, right? And you can't have a journalist who's going to get sued every other day for these tiny inaccuracies when they're reporting on a public official.
That's correct.
You know, it's in the interest of our republic to have government answerable to their actions.
Well, and in both of these opinions, especially the Hustler magazine Supreme Court case, there's a huge discussion, Russ, on First Amendment rights. I mean, we're talking about free speech sure. a lot of the time. I mean, when you are a public figure, when you are out there, when you are famous, people are going to talk about you. And like you just said, if people get the facts about you wrong or they misrepresent an event, you know, the Supreme Court's like, look, too bad, so sad. You're in the public eye. You deserve a heightened level of scrutiny. You can't just sue everybody and anybody who writes about you or talks about you in a way that you don't like.
Right. And another rationale for this higher standard, for this, what is a double standard, but it's a rightful double standard, is that these people, if you're famous, if you're in the public eye, you automatically, by virtue of being famous, have more access to the media. So you have more of ability to rebut these false claims.
Yeah, look at a politician. I mean, a politician can call a press conference today to discuss anything that they want. People will listen. They are entrusted with the public's, you know, they have the public's trust. They're going to be held accountable by the public. They have the ability to speak to the public and communicate to the public.
Right. Whereas you have a everyday guy, you have Joe the plumber, who doesn't have that kind of platform. If he is defamed and he's losing his plumbing business because of that defamation, you know, you don't have much recourse like someone would if they were in the public eye.
I remember that guy, Joe the plumber.
Yeah, he was. I wonder what he's up to. That's a blast from the past.
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably still plumbing.
he might have been able to cash in a little bit there for a while. He was like on a debate or something like that and asked a question, and
yes,
everybody and was then, talking about Joe the plumber, right?
He became the darling of one political party for a period of time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fact that we still know him probably means it would be really, really tough for him to bring a defamation lawsuit. Sounds like a public figure to me.
Dude, what he should be doing is shopping around for like a reality TV show.
Well, it might be a little late for that.
We both know him still. Yeah? I mean, I bet most of our viewers still know Joe the Plumber.
Would you watch that show?
It depends on how good the promo is. How juicy is it going to be?
All right. Well, Russ, I mean, look, we've just been spewing out a bunch of legal gobbledygook here. I mean, we're talking about Supreme Court opinions and throwing out words like actual malice. I think our listeners want to get nitty gritty with this. I think they want to play with this stuff really organically here. I think we need some examples, some hypotheticals, maybe from people that we know. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, I feel like first, I think that we've just created several hundred experts in libel law.
Right.
And so anyone out there listening, you're one of these experts and you get to test your mettle. And I think you're right. Who does everyone know? I mean,
Jebediah, that name rings a bell.
That, you know what? Let's go with Jebediah and Cornelius.
Yeah, why not? Pick those at random,
and,
right?
Right. And let's get a woman in there because we're equal.
Monica, Megan, Mina,
Myrtle.
Oh, perfect. Okay. So we have our actors. All right. Let's set up some hypotheticals here to discuss. Let's talk. Is this legal? Is this libel? Is this slander? You guys have to answer all these questions. Here we go. Russ, what's number one?
So number one, so Jebediah, he is a owner of a covered wagon shop. Jebediah.
Okay. True to his Amish ways.
Exact. Well, I don't know if he's Amish, but he's at least a pioneer. At a minimum.
Okay. So, can we make him an Amish pioneer?
Yeah, I suppose so. Why the heck not? So he's building wagons. He's putting them together. He's selling them to people. Maybe they're going to Oregon. Maybe they're going to grandma's house. I don't know. but in any case, he has a covered wagon business. And Cornelius, who is not a fan of Jebediah, our loyal listeners will know that they are often at odds. He says, he goes out and tells the whole town, he says, you know what? Jebediah cheated Myrtle out of $200 in his covered wagon business.
Okay.
Right there, listeners, Did he commit slander?
Da, 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 da. What do we think, Russ? I mean, I guess let's walk through the elements that we talked about. Let's first of all,
did he publish a statement?
He published a statement because he said it out loud and it was heard by another person.
Right.
Okay.
Third party.
He made a statement of fact. I think he didn't say, I didn't hear in my opinion there. I mean, he said categorically that Jebediah bilked a Myrtle out of $200 related to a covered wagon sale.
And that is a fact that is demonstrably able to be proven true or false. It's not that he said he generally cheats customers.
Right.
He said in this case, he cheated a customer out of $200. And that customer is Myrtle over there, right, who's moaning because she's so upset about the $200 she lost.
So that's a statement of fact because it's either true or false and can be proven true or false. So far, this is sounding like defamation.
What about injury?
I think we have an injury here because the statement was regarding Jebediah's business.
Absolutely.
And so if clearly that would be injurious to his reputation, it would be easily foreseeable that if this is a small village, his business might suffer, maybe go under.
He clearly could lose business from this statement that basically said he's not a truthful tradesman.
I'm assuming for this hypothetical, Cornelius is not a public figure. He's just a guy in town, right?
Right.
So I think that we have a successful defamation.
Well, it would have been Jebediah. Jebediah is a guy in town. He's not a public figure.
I'm sorry. He was the one who talked about.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
I don't want to confuse the party. Sorry.
Right. Now, really quick, just super quick. If Cornelius had just gone up to Jebediah and said, Jebediah, you cheated my girl Myrtle out of $200. That's not slander, is it?
That is not. Defamation, slander, libel. Remember, it has to be published to a third party.
Right.
If it's communicated directly to the impugned individual, we call that an insult.
Right.
And that's not injurious to the person. You're not able to recover in a defamation lawsuit there. We're talking about reputation.
Right. Jebediah is not going to stop buying wagons from his own company.
That's exactly right. One other thing that's important to mention too, because I actually didn't know this until I started researching this. Russ, the purpose of a defamation lawsuit, the goal of a defamation lawsuit, do you think that the goal is to punish the defamer, or do you think it's to make the victim of the defamation whole again?
I did not know this till I started. I know the answer because we're doing this podcast, and I actually did a little work ahead of time. I didn't know this either. The purpose, though, is to make the victim of the defamation whole.
Right.
It is not to punish the defamer.
Right.
So, which is very interesting, but that makes sense because you're going to have far less lawsuits because you're going to have far less injury. If it was to punish the defamer, punish the person who's thrown out these false facts, everyone could be sued all the time for defamation.
Right.
And, you know, that's not the point of this law.
I mean, it certainly has that effect. I mean, certainly by getting sued and possibly successfully, right, you are punishing the defamer. But you're right. The stated goal is really to make the victim whole again.
All right. So let's go back to this Cornelius Jebediah thing because I'm intrigued. So let's
remind me one time, just to make sure I got it. Jebediah is the maker of the wagons.
Yes.
Okay. And Cornelius is the defamer.
The person who's throwing out these accusations.
Okay. Stir in the pot.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
So let's say instead of going and telling people in town, he doesn't tell a single soul. All he does is hops on his computer because, I mean, everyone knows that Facebook existed back in this time.
The 1700s? Well, of course they know that. And of course they know that the Amish people love using electronic devices such as computers and social media. So
I mean, as long as you don't get caught, what's wrong?
Right, right. So of course everybody understands all that. Russ, go ahead with this, this relatable hypothetical.
So Cornelius hops on his computer, hops on Facebook, and just sends a blast out saying, Jebediah cheated Myrtle out of $200 in a wagon transaction.
Now, of course, we're assuming that statement can be proven false.
Right.
I mean,
it can be.
Yeah. Okay. Right. And so, you know, if you're suing for this action, you have to say this is false, obviously. So here, this is a little bit different now. We have Cornelius making the statements, but then we also have Facebook allowing this to happen
and promoting it.
They're a platform it seems like they're fairly complicit here.
They're disseminating it to millions of people.
Like literally without Facebook, this statement would never have been heard.
Right.
So it sure seems like we might have an action against Facebook, or do we, Russ?
You would think so, but because of Section 30 of, give me a second, of the Communications Decency Act.
Everybody knows passed, I'm sure.
Well, I tell you, it was passed by Congress in the 90s, I believe. Don't quote me on that, but I believe in the 90s. And Section 30 basically says that any interactive computer service is, by definition, not a publisher of whatever information is published on their platform.
Okay.
So
they're not responsible for the content on their platform.
Twitter, Facebook, none of those are responsible for the content on their platform. Now, if anyone's been following the news lately, like, this is up for debate. Like, people, especially with Facebook exercising more discretion, Twitter exercising discretion. I mean, Twitter banned Donald Trump.
They're regulating content.
Yes. And so this is definitely something that I would guess is going to change soon, because they're acting more and more like publishers. And when they do that, they're going to start finding themselves liable for the content that is published on their platform. But as of right now, Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act protects anything like that from being sued.
So going back to the hypothetical then, he can't, Jebediah cannot sue Facebook for disseminating the post, but can he sue Cornelius for sending the post in the first place?
Absolutely. Cornelius is still, now it's libel instead of slander.
Right, exactly. Instead of,
you slandered me, good sir.
You've libeled me, you good mate. Because again, that's how Amish people talk.
Good mate.
I don't know what they say in jolly old England. I was trying to go for something from, like, you know, the Knights of the Round Table, and I couldn't. I drawn a blank.
I was thinking of the Pennsylvania Amish, not the English Amish. But why not?
Yeah, you know what? It's all the same. But whatever.
So let's do one more derivative of this hypothetical.
Listeners, are you still there with us?
Are you with us? Hopefully.
Assuming that we haven't turned anybody off yet and you haven't shut down the podcast yet, let's do one more.
All right. So you have the same hypothetical, except now Jebediah, in addition to being the owner and purveyor of Jebediah's wagons, he is also the mayor of this small pioneer village.
Okay.
So now,
sounds like a public official.
Yes.
Might be another way of saying that.
It sounds a lot like a public official. So what changes here, Colin?
So what changes here is that now our friend Jebediah, he not only has to prove that a statement of fact that was wrong was published, he has to prove that Cornelius knew that the statement was false and he said it anyway.
Right.
So he has to be able to prove that Cornelius just wasn't simply mistaken. And frankly, I think Cornelius would be able to say, hey, I'm just passing on what I heard.
Right.
I don't know if this is true or not, but this is what I was told. And, you know, I wanted people to know about it. I think that defamation lawsuit is going to fail, because I think that our friend Jebediah is going to be very hard pressed to show that actual malice standard, to show that Cornelius absolutely knew that statement was false and said it anyway.
Right, exactly.
At least that's his defense.
Yeah, yeah. If Jebediah were just the purveyor of wagons and not the mayor, then Cornelius saying, hey, I'm just passing it along, not a defense.
Right. So should we go back to our friend Sydney? Put a bow on that.
Super quick. I want to it's interesting that there are many states that actually have criminal libel statutes. So
Everything we've been talking about so far has been civil, right? One person suing another person for damages.
For money.
Right. No one's going to jail here.
Right. But there are some states that actually do have criminal libel statutes where you could go to jail for libel, for defamation, for slander.
Okay.
Now, for any of those, it's that higher standard. It's the public official standard, even though you don't have to be a public official.
You have to prove that the statement was false.
Was knowingly false. Or was made with that actual malice.
Yeah.
You either recklessly disregarded its truth or you knew it was false. But there's some states where, hey, you start spreading lies about Jebediah, knowing their lies, you're going to the hoose cow.
I mean, I can, in a way, I can understand that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's, you know, if you think of it in the context of fraud, for example, which we know, of course, is criminal. You know, you can't commit fraud if you bilk somebody for money under false misrepresentations.
Right.
You're guilty of fraud. In a way, it's similar here. I mean, if you are knowingly making a statement that really is designed to impugn someone for the purpose of impugning them, knowing that your statement is false, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, no, you're going to end up in the
the stocks. Your
head and your arms are going to be through the wood and you're going to be in the public square.
This is Amish justice we're still talking about, right? I mean, yeah, they shame you. They throw the tomatoes at you and they don't invite you to church that Sunday.
This is where Cornelius is going to be. Maybe he'll have a scarlet letter pinned on him. I'm mixing my metaphors here.
They probably make him walk around without his suspenders anymore.
How embarrassing.
Knows? Yeah, I mean, geez.
But let's go back to Dominion. Okay. Dominion versus Sidney Powell.
So now that we know what we know, Russ, right? Let's look at this a little bit more carefully.
Right.
Let's go back to those original defamatory statements that she and Russ, one thing maybe you mentioned this, I don't remember if you did or not, but under what context did she make these statements? Were these statements in a press conference? Were these written statements? Can you elaborate on how she made those statements?
Yes and yes. She basically made the statements every chance she got. She made them in press conferences. She made them at Republican gatherings. She made them in court filings.
Ooh, court filings, you say?
Which is interesting. Yeah, because remember, her defense is no reasonable person would conclude that these statements were statements of fact.
Well, I wonder if a judge then is a non-reasonable person, because if she's making these assertions in a court pleading, let's face it, lawyers are under a ethical duty to not misrepresent the truth in a legal pleading.
And to not bring frivolous lawsuits.
Yeah. And if you're going to make an assertion as bold as the one she's claiming, you must support evidence for that in the legal pleading that you're filing.
Yeah.
I mean, these are things that this is just ethical law that we have to abide by. So I think that's a problem for her.
That's a problem for her. And as a quick aside, she is under investigation for disbarment in Michigan.
Okay.
For these representations that she made. But she's essentially saying her defense to this is it essentially is that these statements were opinions. They were not statements of fact. They were statements that were going to be resolved in the court of law.
Okay.
That's her defense. So she's saying these were not statements of fact.
Yep. I mean, interestingly enough, she is not asserting truth as a defense. She's not here, that's the most common defense to defamation. Right. She's not saying, I stand by these statements. They're absolutely true.
Right.
And we can prove it. That's not a defense here. You know, her... And really, you know, she never actually specifically said, in my opinion. She's not necessarily saying this is my opinion. She really is. She's kind of trying to get there.
Right. She's asserting that now.
Right.
She's trying to retroactively say these were my opinions and I was just putting them out there to be resolved in the court of law.
Right.
But that is not how she framed them.
Right.
And you have massive injury.
Right.
Dominion had contracts canceled all over the world.
Right.
Dominion is probably going bankrupt.
Right.
Unless they're successful here and they can actually collect.
I was thinking about that. I mean, even if you're a Democratic politician, you probably don't want a Dominion voting system in your state just because you're concerned about the appearance of impropriety for the election. If you're Republican and you actually believe this stuff about Dominion, you're of course thinking that this was responsible for fraudulent elections.
Right.
So, I mean, the chilling effect to Dominion is very clear and palpable.
It's massive. Yeah. There's a very demonstrable injury here, and the injury is in the hundreds of millions, if not in the billions. I think they came up with a 1.3 yeah. by an accounting of this is what our business has lost.
By the way, Dominion, not a public figure either. So no. we don't have yeah. that actual malice standard here.
Right.
This is a private company. You know, they don't.
And no one, they weren't famous before this.
No, right? No one knew what Dominion was until people like Sidney Powell started opening her mouth.
Right. So interestingly, I feel like, you know, as far as defenses go, this may be her best defense, but
it's laughable because, I mean, of course the media is reporting, the spin on this is her defense is no one in their right mind would believe anything that I say,
right.
even though I'm saying it.
Right. And directly at, I mean, that is the media spin on it, but you know, directly at odds with that is, well, she filed lawsuits that have to be legitimate,
right.
making these same allegations.
Yeah.
But her, you know, her argument that, hey, this was my opinion, had she said, I believe that Dominion may have bribed Georgia officials.
That would have been perfect.
Right. Or if she said, the Dominion voting machines need investigation to see if they transferred
right.
votes from Biden to Trump. If she had just worded it like that,
yeah.
then she'd be in really, I think, on very strong footing.
I mean, one
but
thing,
she didn't.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's painfully obvious to me, I mean, we're talking about an attorney here, and obviously defamation, libel, slander were not on her mind
no.
when she made these statements.
No.
So anyway, we'll update you as that civil case proceeds. But I think we have some more important things that we need to move on to, Russ.
I think we do. I think it's time for
DCOTW! Oh yeah, baby, we are back. You probably thought we forgot about Dumb Criminal of the Week. No, we didn't. Give us some credit.
We wouldn't do you dirty like that, people.
No, we would not. So we're going to talk today and award some knuckleheads to the terrorist who claimed his own reward, Russ.
this is absurd.
This is pretty funny. This happened back in 2012. There was a mid-level Taliban commander who was wanted by federal authorities in the United States. Not wanted very badly. He had a reward of $100
okay.
to his name. We're not exactly talking about 10 most wanted here.
We might even say low level Taliban commander.
Right.
He commanded 2 goats and 4 sheep and a couple chickens.
Yeah, and I don't think he was wanted for terrorism. I think he was wanting for shoplifting a candy bar. this gentleman by the name of Mohammed Ashan saw his mugshot and saw that there was a reward that was being offered for his capture. So being the young entrepreneur that he was, he decided, well, I want to get me some of that cold hard cash. I want some of that flow. He went right to the police station, turned himself in and said, you see that poster on the wall there? That's me. I'd like my $100, please.
I'd like my Benjamin.
The officials at the desk were baffled and yet promptly arrested him. And
they're not going to look a gift horse in the mouth.
And unfortunately, by the way, that commander, Mr. Ashan, never got that $100.
False advertising.
I mean, it seems like he might have a cause of action with $100. I mean, he's offer acceptance, consideration. I don't know.
I mean, really, what he should have done is just had his wife turn him in so that she could get the money.
At least. I mean,
at a minimum. Yeah,
he obviously didn't think this through. So the authorities were at a loss to explain his actions, although one U.S. official reportedly told journalists, clearly, this man is an imbecile. I agree, Russ. So now we need to decide how meritorious these actions are of our coveted knucklehead awards.
Okay.
You go first, man.
I'll go first. I have a very clear opinion on this one.
Okay.
You know, this guy clearly, I agree, he is clearly an imbecile. And normally, I would give him 5 knuckleheads for this move. However, I think he should have got that reward.
Okay.
Because he turned, he abided by the, there was, like you said, there was an offer. He fulfilled that offer.
Yeah, he turned himself in.
Where's his honey?
Criminal captured.
He should have gotten that $100.
But for the reward, that guy would be out in custody again, right?
Exactly. So I'm giving him 4. I'm knocking off one knucklehead for that.
Russ, for the first time in DCTOW history, I am given the full 5 on this guy. This guy checked all the boxes for me. What really pushes me to the 5 knucklehead rating is the fact that the finder's fee was only $100. Like if it was $1,000, right. It was $100,000, $1 million. You know, I could see, hey, let's at least go for it. Like they're probably going to catch me anyway. Let's see if I can put out a little nest egg for the fam. But it was $100, man. I mean,
put that into perspective. $100 in Afghanistan is probably worth a whole heck of a lot more than $100 here. Like that.
But it's here. He's got $100. He's not going back to Afghanistan.
Well, he's in custody and taken here. but I mean, if he had pulled this off correctly, like maybe his wife and kids would have had a brand new villa.
Oh, man. Well,
in a new cave. I don't know.
I liked it. 5 knuckleheads for me. Man, what a moron. That's a good one.
That's a good one. Well, as always, everyone, go ahead and hit us up on Twitter. Is This Legal Pod on Facebook? Hevitz McCallan. Find us anywhere you listen to your podcast.
Tell Alexa, play Is This Legal? And yep, she's got no choice. God, she's going
to
do it.
I've always wanted to say that. And now we can say it. And it works.
Yep, that's right. All right, guys, we'll see you in a couple weeks for our next fresh episode. Until then,
we're signing off from Denver, Colorado.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Is This Legal? See you next time.